ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
I'm glad you're listening to episode 142 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I've got a special interview with Dan Juergens, comics creator extraordinaire, someone I've enjoyed as a writer and artist for years. He's talking a lot about what he's doing recently, and that has to do with Future's End, a weekly comic from DC, as well as Aquaman and the others, and we discuss some other things that he's been up to as well. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Welcome to the podcast, Dan Juergens, one of the very best writer-artists ever in the comics field, in my opinion, who's doing all kinds of good things these days, including Future's End and Aquaman and the others. How are you doing today, Dan?
Very good, Wayne. How about you?
Doing well, doing well. I have to say, I'm a longtime fan. I have been reading and enjoying your storytelling for as long as the last couple of decades, at least. Have been enjoying Superman, was where I first noticed you. Enjoyed your Teen Titans, your Justice League, your Spider-Man, all over the place. And I see your name, I'm after it. So you're one of the best, in my opinion.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate that.
So I thought what we would do today, we starting with the wonderful stuff that's going on in Future's End. Do you want to give people a little description as to what's going on in this weekly comic?
Sure, by all means. I think that the first thing to understand is that Future's End is a weekly book from DC Comics that takes place in the DC universe 5 years from now, as a matter of fact. And when you saw the original issue, issue zero, which was part of DC's free Comic Book Day giveaway program, we started in a future that's even, you know, farther away from now than that, which was 35 years from now, where Brother Eye had pretty much taken over the world and, you know, a good part of humanity had been turned into cyborgs and the cities were coming down as the world was being reshaped. And in order to prevent that future from happening, Terry McGinnis, who most of you will probably recognize as Batman Beyond, decided to make a time jump into the past in order to stop Brother Eye's creation. However, he came up 5 years short. And so instead of arriving in our present, he's here 5 years from now. And that's where this entire adventure takes place. And it's a weekly book with a tremendously large cast, lots of stuff going on it, and all of it, you know, is setting up DC's September event, which is just next month now, in which the entire line jumps 5 years forward into the future. And then beyond that, it's going to take us somewhere very special.
You didn't know that. That's good to know about where we're going from here. Is this going to last a year? How long is this weekly going to go?
Not quite a year. It's going to run 48 issues.
Okay, so that's good to know. We're in about the 20s about now, teens and 20s, so it's been going on for quite a while, and you've created quite a stir, you and your co-creators like Keith Giffen and Brian Azzarello and other folks. There's a lot of things that are happening that people are discussing, but it's just so appropriate that one of the things that they're talking about is Superman.
Right.
And you've got a masked Superman going on there. And why don't you talk a little bit about that situation? Because that is got a lot of people in up in arms, and they don't know who it is. And, of course, that drives people crazy when they don't know what's going on with Superman.
Sure.
Do you want to talk about that concept and how you came up with it? And don't spoil too much.
Don't worry, I won't. Okay. One of the things that we decided to do is, you know what's interesting? I think, anyway, that – As we first started, obviously, I had mentioned Batman Beyond. But we also knew that, you know, given the fact that we had the whole DC universe to play with, we wanted to deal with Superman as well. And as part of that, what we asked ourselves was, you know, what would Superman be like 5 years from now? What exactly would we be looking at? And one of the things we reference quite often in the series is this idea that in between now and then, there was this massive conflict, a war that came to Earth and found its way here and certainly transformed society, made some lasting changes, and altered the lives of some characters. And as a result, one of the things we see is a Superman character who no longer wears a cape. He wears a mask with a faceplate on it, seems to be a somewhat edgier Superman. And we're, you know, and that has people wondering what exactly is going on. Who is it? Is it Kal-El? Has something happened to his face? Why is he hiding? And what exactly is the story there? And we've been building that for a while. And I'd have to say that issue 17, which comes out next week, is going to be a pretty big issue for us because we finally answer most all of those questions in that issue.
Because people are guessing it's the current Superman, it's Earth 2 Clark, it's Earth 2 Val Zod, it's Alexander Luthor, which is kind of the farthest one out there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's supposed to be the fun of it, that in comics there is still supposed to be, I think, that aspect of fun. And one of the ways to do that is to have that mystery and have that guessing game. So people can be just speculating about it and say, is it this guy? Is it that guy? And if it is my guy, why do you think he's doing it that way? So, yeah, all of that kind of builds to a head in issue 17, and we will have that revelation along with lots of answers. And I think the cover was just released here either last night or this morning out there. I've seen it on the web, and it's this, you know, beautiful cover. We have Lois Lane sort of standing on the edge of a rooftop where Superman is hovering essentially over the city right in front of her. And we see a bit of a broken faceplate on his mask. So it's all coming next issue.
Wow. Okay. So that'll be fun to get to. It's great to have people talking about Superman again and doing those kinds of things because Superman is, you know, he's so moral so much of the time that it's kind of hard to write that character. You didn't seem to be challenged by that when you wrote him. You always had really interesting stories going on and you challenged him. Sometimes I think today they could use some of that advice that you were using back then to make Superman a little more of a vibrant character. You know, you've got Batman who's basically, he's got his morality issues and darkness and stuff. But Superman, because he tends to make the right decisions, he can be a little difficult to write. So it's nice to see Superman back in the spotlight again.
Yeah, you know, and I actually have never felt that way. That I know that in part because of his power level and in part because of some of the concepts that you just mentioned, there have been those who say, you know, Superman is a tough character to write. And, you know, I have never felt that way at all. And I think a lot of it gets down to, you know, finding the human in Superman. And I think the more that some people try and push it down that road toward being an alien and focusing on Krypton and all that other stuff, that there are no answers to be found there. I really think that we're talking about an individual who was raised on a farm in Kansas and raised by, you know, human parents and lived a very, very human life. And I think, you know, certainly even living on a farm is, for people of I have known that have been raised on a farm, is something that puts them very much in touch with nature, with concept of life and death in general. So, yeah, I've just never felt that way about the character.
Well, how do you see the character as far as Superman goes? It's just because you've written so many good Superman stories that I've read over the years. What's the thing that makes your take seem to be so different from what other people have been holding?
Yeah, I don't know. I always have a hard time comparing my work to that of others, especially on the same character, because I realize that for the most part, we all probably start from a different place because we envision that character differently. To me, it's pretty much what I said before. I think the idea is to emphasize that which is more human in the character. And I think that's where you then get into almost kind of a dichotomy where, you know, to me, Superman might feel alone because of his responsibilities and because of his power level and the things he can do. But I don't think he feels alone because he's an alien or anything else. I don't think that in a world of superheroes where, you know, some people are green and some people have wings and some people are giants and some people can shrink, that they're going to look at Superman and think of him really as an alien anyway. So I think that any writer's vision of the character really starts with that very platform that they begin word one from as to who that character might be. So, you know, comparisons, I tend not to go down that road and just, you know, talk about how I see it. And right now that's, you know, like I say, I just never had a problem finding a story for someone that fits into that category.
Well, I wish you were writing him in one of his books again, because those are great, fun stories. And is this going to be like a pivotal point when we find out about Superman? Is it going to create a change in the series moving forward in Futures End?
Yes.
Okay. So more than that, we don't need to know at the moment. Right. We'll find out when we read the book.
Well, it's going to take down. I think we have, you know, sometimes you see this in stories. I think we build to a particular point, and then we take there's a fork in the road where the story will end up going in a couple of different directions that I think people are really going to enjoy.
Good. Well, looking forward to that greatly. So that'll be great fun. Now, of course, appropriately enough, who else is involved but Lois Lane?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much.
And she's interacting with this whole business. Do you want to talk about her character and what she's got to do with the story?
Well, I think, you know, certainly we've had a lot of fun using Lois, and it's you know, we talked about her a great deal. Where would she be 5 years from now, and how might she be functioning? And what we've done is set her up in Metropolis with her own website called The Fast Lane. And so she's still very much the investigative journalist. This is her own thing now that she's supporting and running very much on her own. And we first saw her pretty much tied in with the you know, the mystery of the Teen Titans and this idea that the Titans died during the war. And she came to the conclusion that by finding a mysterious box on her doorstep, that Tim Drake might still be alive. And I think we all know that Tim Drake is Red Robin, only she doesn't certainly know anything about Tim Drake. She just understands that a mysterious bartender in New York might have been Red Robin. And that's one story she's been in pursuit of. And I think we've seen her work on some other things. And as this entire series builds and as it moves through a couple of different directions, Lois is certainly going to be a main player as she explains, you know, things not only to the world in terms of where they are 5 years from now, but in a way she's our, you know, she's our stand-in for the readers. And she's the one who is finding out the answer to all these mysteries, and coincidentally, of course, therefore the readers do at the same time.
Very cool. Well, that's what Lois Lane's always been for. So that's good to see her back in that role again. So that's great fun. Now, you've got a lot of other things going on in there. Have you guys, I mean, it's you and Mr. Giffen and Mr. Lemire and all these other people.
Right.
Do you guys spread the writing around as far, since you're more familiar with Superman? Are you kind of the Superman writer in the bunch? How does that work when you guys put the issues together?
Oh, gosh. It's a group effort, and it is, you know, in the beginning, we were getting together fairly frequently. We still talk on the phone weekly as we try to build these stories and sort our way through them. And typically, the way we're working it is each of us will take 5 pages per issue, approximately, to move the stories that we're working on as individuals and the characters we're handling as individuals forward. That having been said, you know, in terms of the Superman stuff, it's very much been Brian Azzarello and me as we kind of put that together and start to take it in that direction. And it's, you know, it's one of these things where everyone built the overall world and story together. We spend time with individual characters, but then the characters will move from one writer to the next. So, for example, whereas I have been working on Lois Lane for a good run here, coming up very shortly, I hand her off to Jeff Lemire, because then she starts to interact more with his cast of characters. And we kind of have that bobbing and weaving as we go along, where a writer that, or a character that one of us might have been focusing on gets handed off to someone else, and then we trade and swap and kind of work our way through it as we build the story.
That must be kind of fun for you guys to challenge each other in some ways when you set up a character and you say, now you fix this.
Well, yeah. It's not necessarily a case of fixing so much as it is trying to find the right moment. And it is, and there again, it's something that Brian and I have been sorting through with some elements of the Batman Beyond story, which is when do we transition from one of us as writer to the next one as writer, as well as the characters involved. Because what we do have here is a very large cast and a very complex story. So as you march your way through that, there are a lot of things to reconcile.
Mm-hmm. And it's a great story too, because I can't think of any of the threads that are really that are difficult or I get to that thread and I go, oh, not this thread. They're all very interesting. You've got Amethyst and Frankenstein, and now John Constantine's coming into the mix.
Yep.
You're going to have Batman Beyond fight Batman, which is always something I'm dying to see every time. Always like to see those things happen. And then the Cadmus Island business with the Green Pyramid. There's so many things to go on. You kind of need a scorecard sometimes, but you need that for a weekly series.
Yeah, and one of the things we always have to try and do is make sure we go back and that, you know, that if we introduce something in issue 4, that we connect the dots and we don't just, you know, drop things by mistake. But, you know, you mentioned John Constantine, for example. And I think even on that one, it's one of those where I think at first people kind of had the reaction of, you know, Constantine? Really? You know, how does he fit into this? And yet it seems out there as a bit of a concept, yet that's what makes it fun, I think, because obviously John builds, and once again, that happens in issue 17 too, for his story, a very particular point that we, you know, I think it's a lot of fun when you write comics to take what appear to be non-connected disparate characters and start to connect them. That, you know, obviously it's real easy to always put, you know, Superman and Batman together, for example. But when you start to add very different characters into the mix, especially with the way things have changed over 5 years, I think that's where you get to some aspects that are real fun for readers because it shows you something new and different.
Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of things we need in comics, especially somebody like me who's been reading for quite a long time. You like to see something that's different that we haven't seen before. So all those kinds of things are great for that. Now, I was reading your interview with USA Today recently, and there was a quote in there or something that you said in there that kind of intrigued me. They said that one of your favorite new characters is 50 Sue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about why that is and maybe if somebody hasn't been reading it, who that character is?
50 Sue is, you know, what appears to be, what, about a, you know, 8-year-old girl on Cadmus Island who clearly has some type of tremendous power. And not only does she have that tremendous power, she is remarkably jaded, cynical, kind of edgy, if you will. And I just think that there, again, you get that sort of visual contradiction of here's this sweet-looking little girl with pigtails and, you know, like she should have a lollipop in her hand and all that kind of classic visual imagery. But in reality, she's clearly something different. And I just think it's a lot of fun because of that edge she brings and because of that visual contradiction. And I think the readers have sort of latched on to that as well. So then, yes, she's on Cadmus Island, which is this island that's out there in the middle of nowhere that, you know, Lois Lane once flew over. It couldn't see it. It has masking technology and everything else. And we see there are some very unique and special prisoners on that island. So there again, that's a story that is unfolding and heading somewhere in particular. But I think that's a lot of what makes 50 Sue compelling is who she is, what she looks like, her power level, and then the backdrop of the story that she's built into.
Very cool. Well, it's nice to have female characters, too, that people get into, like Lois Lane and 50 Sue. So always really intrigued by women comics characters and as they rise up and become more popular. It's kind of a neat thing to see.
Oh, it is. And I think, you know, we certainly have quite a few in the book. The ones you mentioned, obviously, we've seen Big Barda by now, and I think you'll see Barda start to play a bigger role as well. So, you know, we've also got some other special things coming up for some female characters that we have not yet really seen. So it's something we're certainly aware of and want to be very fair with.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, as far as September goes, because September is always the birthday month of the New 52, do you need to be reading Futures End to understand the other books? Are they, is it intertwined somehow, or are some of them that way? How does this work? You can buy those without having to buy Futures End? How does all this work?
I think that for the most part, you can pick up those 5 year later issues and very much understand the story that you are reading in those issues. The one that might be an exception to that is I wrote the Superman 5 year later issue that Lee Weeks has drawn, and it's just a marvelous, marvelous job by Lee. And that one is very much connected to the Futures End Weekly. So that kind of comes out of it. And then I think people might remember that, you know, way back before Futures End even shipped, there was a promotional poster that was sort of an M.C. Escher style print and everything. And Booster Gold was actually in that poster, yet you haven't seen Booster in the series itself. So even as his issue comes out, 5 year later issue, I really believe that readers will enjoy that a little more if they've been reading the series, and it will connect to something on a larger scale, yes.
Very cool, very cool. Well, Futures End, of course, comes out every week, so there's no excuse not to go to the comic shop.
Exactly right.
As far as that goes. Now, there's one thing that this all brings to my mind is the fact that you are both a writer and an artist, and yet these days it seems like they want you to write more than they want you to draw, and I sort of miss that because I like your art as well.
Well, thanks. I drew issue 3 of Futures End, and the general idea was that I was supposed to be in the regular rotation as one of the artists, but what really did happen is that the reality of writing a weekly book along with all the other work, and I ended up writing, you know, 4 of the 5 year later issues for September and everything, really got in the way. I was able to draw 5-6 pages of the 5 year later Booster Gold issue that's coming out next month, so at least there's something out there, but I absolutely do want to get back to the board and start drawing again fairly soon.
Well, I miss that because looking forward to how you, because you have a very dynamic, clear style, and not everybody does these days.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that. Of course, you mentioned Booster Gold, and I've got to ask, is there, of course, with Futures End, is there a future for Booster Gold in DC Comics?
I think there's always a future for good characters in comics, and I like to think Booster is a good character, so my answer would be, yeah, I think there's a future for him.
Good, we'd like to see that, because he's always been one of those characters that is unlike everybody else.
Right.
And I always like that kind of stuff when it happens, and so I've enjoyed the character and read the books ever since you started creating them, so I'm always happy when he's back around.
Yeah, I think, you know, he adds something to the DCU that... I would say he has a more unique personality than a lot of the classic DC characters have, or, you know, he is more easily set apart, I think it's fair to say. And part of that, obviously, is the humorous aspect of the character, and that kind of goes back to some of his Justice League International days. But in addition, you know, I think that the part of Booster that was always worried about product endorsement and his standing in the media and his Q rating and all that other stuff, I actually think that is more relevant today in this day of an age of celebrity culture than it probably ever was. So I think there's always a place for Booster.
Very cool. Glad to hear that. I'd like to see more of him, to be frank, moving forward. Now, you've got another project that's going on, and it's one that just intrigues me, because Aquaman and the Others, it wasn't that long ago they could barely get Aquaman, you know, selling a comic at all.
Right.
And now he's got two now. And you're doing... Yeah, it's just a shock. You know, we're all shocked by that. Of course, you know, Aquaman used to get ridiculed on Big Bang Theory. They used to always... talk about what a terrible character he was, and they would, you know, give that personality or that costume off to somebody that they were punishing or something.
Right.
And then along came Mr. Johns, and he started Aquaman up again, and it's taken off. It's so nice to see him, because you're working on Aquaman and the Others, which is do you consider that the second Aquaman book? How does this work in the Aquaman family?
I don't look at it either way, as much as I just say Aquaman and the Others is the title that I happen to be writing. And it kind of starts and ends with that. You know, if we go back to his launch in the New 52, his relaunch, as you pointed out, Jeff Johns did a fabulous job re-envisioning the character and taking him down this road where he was no longer perceived in just the way you had mentioned. And they dealt with it in the very first issue, where he made it clear he was not that character anymore. And they built it into the storyline, which I thought was tremendously effective. So, you know, even as he got into relaunching Aquaman and building that story, he introduced a cast, a team that Aquaman was a part of before he hadn't even met the Justice League, called the Others. And so, you know, DC had decided that, yeah, there was enough there that they wanted to try and do a book with it. And it's been great fun. They are an eclectic, diverse bunch that have proven to be a great fun to write.
Well, that's great, because I read the first five issues, and you've had your first arc in those first five issues. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's great to see Aquaman back in charge again. Those of us who remember him from Detroit and being in charge of Justice League, it's nice to see him actually running a group again. And one of the things I've been reading, and you had an interview on a couple of sites where you talked about the diversity of the group, which you've mentioned, is, you know, in today's books, it's so often we get the male white guy who's the muscular fellow about it. It's so nice to see a group like this, which is really diverse and multicultural.
They certainly are. And, you know, we have Iwara, who is Brazilian. We just reintroduced Vostok, a Vostok, who is Russian. And you start to go down through the cast, and we have Saye, who is Kahina's sister. She's Iranian, and, you know, it is a different bunch. The prisoner of war is Dominic Torres, and he's Hispanic. So it is something they did a very good job of envisioning, and that is one of the reasons I wanted to get back to the original constructive elements of the book, which did have Vostok and did have, at that time, Kahina, now replaced by her sister, because they were actually more diverse at that time. And I thought the way each of those puzzle pieces sort of fit together was very important to the group. And I did want to recapture some of that. And that's very much what our first arc was about.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a great story. And of course, you introduced a new villain by the name of Legend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to give a little bit of information in case you haven't picked it up? What is it about Legend that's going to make him a good foe for Aquaman and the Others?
Legend is someone who is actually tied to the origin of the Others, in that if we go way back to what happened with Atlantis and the fact that it was sunk by Atlan, we once saw Atlan actually construct these relics that he uses as weapons, the helmet that Vostok now wears, the Seal of Clarity, the key, and so many other things. His own scepter that Atlan, otherwise known as the Dead King, used out of gold. And what we built with the Legend is this idea that his family goes far, far back in time, before Atlantis even was sunk, and that they actually were the custodians of that enchanted gold that the weapons were fashioned from. So he ties right in, Legend does, with the origins of Atlantis, with the origins of the weapons themselves, and I think that's part of what starts to build a real tie and connection between hero and villain in any good story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. The first five issues were terrific. We've got a couple of more issues coming up when you embark on another storyline. Is this going to be another, like, a five-issue storyline?
It's going to be. We are first interrupted by the five-year later issues of Aquaman, as well as Aquaman and the Others. I wrote both of those. So we take just a little quick detour into taking a look at what these characters might be like 5 years from now. And then we go on in Aquaman and the Others to deal with another story that really explores the nature of a conflict, very strong and deep conflict within the group, that they were unaware of. And what we're going to do now is, if our first storyline was about the construction of the group and who exactly are the Others, this second one gets into very much who are these people as individuals. And it starts to focus very much on that. And it involves some old world Russian stuff. As you know, if you've seen any of the covers out there now, we've seen the KG Beast, for example. We've seen Cheshire. So I think we have a lot of things coming in that would seem to be curveballs to start with, but ultimately, as it plays out, will make a lot of sense.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to that because KG Beast is one of those villains that kind of comes around every once in a while. I'm always fascinated, particularly in light of the new Russia as opposed to the Soviet Union, what his role and everything is.
Right. And I think, yeah, and I am too. I think there's so much there. And some of it, I think, always has to be rooted in old Soviet Union. And if we, one of the clues to some of this could be, for example, that in issues 4 and 5, we saw a base on the moon. And this is where Vostok was living. And, you know, he had alluded that to that in the book when Jeff was writing it. And one of the things I made, you know, that we made very clear that we wanted people to see on that moon base was the old style Soviet flag emblem with the hammer and sickle. And and so what we are very much saying is, yeah, Vostok goes back that far. And obviously, if he goes back that far, it's reasonable to assume he might have had some contact along the way with the KG Beast.
Makes good sense. So, well, Aquaman and the Others, the title almost reminds me of Batman and the Outsiders.
Yeah, I can see where it would, yeah.
I like that very much. One more thing I want to mention about the way that you're doing the diversity and handling that so well. It's great to me that you have, and you and Mr. Johns, well, Mr. Johns probably set it all up, but you're using them effectively, have set them up as their own characters rather than saying Aquaman Jr. or Aquawoman and all that kind of stuff, or giving them identities that are already well-known ones. Instead, you're building these new characters with new identities, and I just like that so much. I don't like it when somebody takes over somebody else's identity. It just, to me, is if these people are well-rounded and good characters, they should be able to stand on their own. So I really like what you're doing with the Others, in that you're making them people that we can admire and enjoy, and I hope that they actually start to shine on their own, that they don't necessarily, maybe someday it'll just be the Others instead of Aquaman.
You know, I'm glad you said that. I feel very much the same way. I've always thought that when it comes into the idea of doing a story where someone steps into, you know, someone else's cape or someone else's mask, that ultimately the story has to be that they are not them. That if, for example, you have a character who puts on, you know, the intrepid, invincible Popsicle Man's mask and uniform and all that stuff, the idea should be that Popsicle Man was so good and so unique at what he did and so capable that no one can fill his shoes. That's what makes them much more of a hero. And I do think it's a little gratuitous these days to have an environment in which, you know, it almost feels like as an industry, we're abandoning the concept of individual minority characters by saying, okay, we're going to put you in this guy's suit and you'll be his doppelganger. And it goes on down the line. And I would think, and I can't speak for anyone else, but I would just think that, you know, were I a minority looking for representation in the pages of comics, I would much rather see something like all the great work that Milestone Comics had, where here is a cast of really incredible minority characters. It was a very diverse cast, and it was good, solid comics. And to me, that's much better than just saying, you know, here's another guy in so-and-so suit, and oh, guess what? He happens to be black, because there's something about that that feels rather condescending and gratuitous to me.
I feel exactly the same way. And I'll actually name a name, and you don't have to get into this, but that when I saw Miles Morales become Spider-Man, I was really sort of, it felt to me like, you know, we can't make an identity that fits this person unless he's Spider-Man. And I was very surprised that people weren't more offended than they were, but, you know, it did pretty well, and it's going along still, and I'm glad for it. But I'd really like to see more characters like the Others blossom in comics and develop into something of their own followings, and just do such a good job of attracting people of color and diverse people into reading, and getting even those of us, the white males, involved and looking at it and saying, you know, I really want to learn more about these cultures. I really want to get to understand these people and see them as human beings and people that I can get to know. And so I want to see characters like that in the comics.
Yeah, and I think really if you go back to even the construction of what we think of as the modern X-Men, and where Storm became so incredibly popular, where, you know, we had fun with the idea that, oh, here's Banshee, who, you know, obviously clearly is not from a farm in Kansas and everything else. And and I think they really, you know, even back then figured out a very nice way to build a diverse cast that, you know, has endured all this time. So, yeah, I think it's something that we as an industry need to work harder on, that we need to kind of double down in our efforts in those directions, because just using the suit to give someone that level of representation, as I said, it just feels like the easy way out. And I think that we can find ways to do these things and make them work and succeed and hang on and sell.
All right, well, first thing they could do is bring back Milestone.
Wouldn't that be great?
I'd love to see those back. That would be fantastic. They did, you know, they had Static on in cartoons and stuff, and it seemed to do pretty well. And every once in a while, they bring Milestone back, and it just sort of fizzles away. And I never understand why.
Yeah, I don't know either. I would like to think that there's still a place for Milestone and everything those guys did. I mean, it was really a case where a bunch of really talented creators poured their heart and soul into it, and it showed. I mean, there was so much that came through on the page, so. Yeah, I'd love to see it come back again.
You know, I'd also like to see come back was a character you created and you had back in the Justice League, Bloodwind.
Bloodwind, yeah. It's funny, we were just talking about Bloodwind in San Diego, so.
No, really, because I like that character was great. You know, I talk about diversity, that was way ahead of its time.
It was, you know, it was a lot of fun. I kind of look back on it and, you know, I still like the costume and everything about Bloodwind. The only thing I probably don't like so much is the name, because if there's ever a name in comic that sort of screams, you know, mid-1990 comics, it's anything with the name Blood in front of it, whether it's Bloodshot, Bloodwind, or whatever. So I kind of chuckle at it. But yeah, I think still, you know, absolutely any character has potential and possibility, so why not Bloodwind?
Well, I agree. I'd like to see him come back. You'll have to sneak him into Aquaman the Other sometimes.
Ooh, there's a thought.
Put him in there. So that would be great. So Aquaman the Others, are you working with Jeff Parker? Do you coordinate with him as far as what you're doing with Aquaman?
As we both started out, we certainly had a couple of conversations about where to go with it and, you know, how to make sure we didn't step on each other's toes and everything. I think right now I was focused so much on just trying to establish the characters that I was focusing on that. But I do think that as we go forward, there should be a time where the books link up more than they have been.
Because it might be fun to cross over, have a great big Aquaman event, and cross over between the two titles would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it would be. And we have kicked around the idea in very brief terms, but it's something we do want to get to someday, yes.
It still enthralls me that we were talking about Aquaman, and he's a significant real character again.
Yes.
Boy, just love that. You guys are doing such a great job on those two. Are there any other projects that you're working on that we should be aware of, or are these kind of things keeping you busy?
Right now, it's pretty much more than enough to keep me busy. such is the nature of a weekly book, and you know, we are in the stages of just wrapping up the books that I was writing for September, getting final dialogue, script, color, and art done on all of those things. After that, working on a couple of things that are too early to announce.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the schedule is full.
Good. Well, that's always good to hear. And it's good to know that you have things in the pipeline
Yes. That
are coming along we can find out about later, because you do great stuff and you're a great storyteller, I think, and really looking forward to more and more of your stuff. But because for a little while there, it was a little hard to find your good stuff in there, and now it's good to have you back right in the flow of things.
Yeah, having a lot of fun. It's a fun time in comics. There's a lot of freedom out there to do a lot of different things, and that's always fun.
Well, Dan, it's good talking with you, and much continued success as you go forward and do things, and I'll be there buying your stuff and enjoying it, so keep up the excellent work as always.
Thank you, Wayne.
I wanted to share a quick postscript. After we recorded this interview, The Multiversity Number 1 came out, and who should be in there but Bloodwind himself. He is ahead of his time.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. Since I spoke with Dan Juergens so much about Future's End, I thought I would share a summary of what's happened in the first several issues that was available at DCComics.com at their DC All Access program. If you want to enjoy the whole program, be sure to go to DCComics.com, but until then, here's an audio version of what's happened in the first 10 issues or so of Future's End.
Future's End is in stores now, but before you pick it up, we've got a recap of the most essential and coolest moments so far. 35 years into the future, Earth has been taken over by an artificial intelligence called Brother Eye. Batman plans to travel back in time to stop Brother Eye from ever being created by him and Mr. Terrific. But before he can make the jump, Bruce is critically injured. Unable to complete the mission, Bruce sends Terry McGinnis, Batman Beyond, into the past in his place. The device misses the target, dropping Terry into the past 7 years too late, 5 years into our future. The creation of Brother Eye is already happening, and saving the future may now be impossible. In this future, a war between Earth 1 and Earth 2 raged in the recent past. Citizens even have ID cards identifying that they are Earth 1 residents and not Earth 2 doppelgangers. In New York, Jason Rush, one half of the hero known as Firestorm, receives a distress call from Green Arrow. Ronnie, Firestorm's other half, has been ignoring his duties as a hero and drags his feet. Firestorm responds to the distress call too late, and it ends up getting Green Arrow killed. At Oliver's funeral, Arsenal confronts Firestorm about ignoring the call for help, with Jason begging to be let out of the Firestorm Matrix to apologize. Ronnie flies off, keeping Jason trapped inside the Matrix for weeks to stop him from telling the truth about what really happened. Jason and Ronnie have a huge falling out, and Firestorm is no more. Meanwhile, Lois Lane receives a mysterious package full of tantalizing clues, one of which leads her to a bar run by Tim Drake, aka Red Robin, thought long dead when the Teen Titans were killed during the Earth 2 War. Tim now goes by Cal and denies that he was ever a superhero. Tim's girlfriend Madison wants to believe him but can't help asking questions, even going as far as visiting her father, Maxwell Payne, imprisoned for selling arms and information to the enemy during the war. Lois's next clue leads her out into the ocean to a specific set of coordinates which seemingly leads nowhere, but actually mark a mysterious island cloaked from Lois's view. But Lois isn't alone. King Faraday is following her, only to be stopped by a masked and intense Superman who marks her as off-limits. Faraday has other interests beside Lois, namely Cole Cash, also called Grifter, a man who has the ability to detect aliens, Earth 2 doppelgangers, and metahumans. Faraday coerces Grifter into returning with him to Cadmus Island, where he is asked to join a special task force with Deathstroke and a feisty young girl named 50 Sue. Grifter is being recruited as a sort of bloodhound, using his abilities to kill or capture closeted metahumans. But that's not the only nasty surprise waiting for him. Cole learns that the island houses a secret prison full of Earth 2 superhumans. Across the galaxy, Stormwatch's carrier is attacked by an unknown force calling itself the Storm. Shade assembles a rescue mission comprised of Frankenstein, seen here fighting a polar bear, Amethyst, and Ray Palmer. The team cuts across the galaxy by using the Phantom Zone as a shortcut,
where they're attacked by imprisoned supervillains, including Black Adam. They make it through, but not before Frankenstein loses his arm. They find the wreckage of the carrier and the dead bodies of all but Apollo and the engineer, who seem to be missing. Palmer, in a fit of ingenuity, hacks off Hawkman's arm to replace Frankenstein's lost one. Things are going fine until Hawkman wakes up. The nth metal in Hawkman's blood is miraculous. It even starts regenerating his arm. Handy. Hawkman's emergency communicator suddenly starts beeping. It seems someone from Stormwatch survived, after all. Back on Earth, Jason, now no longer Firestorm, learns that his mentor developed a teleporter similar to the tech the Justice League uses. Moments after the teleporter fails its first test, Superman arrives. He's not happy about the idea of the public having access to teleportation technology. Technology Jason suspects was just sabotaged by Supes. Superman also tells Jason to fix his problem with Ronnie because the world needs Firestorm. Meanwhile, Terry breaks into Mr. Terrific's building in an attempt to destroy the Brother Eye technology, but he's only able to bypass security for a few moments before he's forced to retreat. Terrific suspects espionage and goes after this mysterious Batman that isn't Batman. Terry escapes, but he loses the body of the Brother Eye cyborg that piggybacked with him from the future. Mr. Terrific is blown away by the cyborg's technology. It's decades ahead of anything he's seen before. The Brother Eye apocalypse just took another step closer. Terry isn't giving up so easily. He turns to a trio of thieves, Coil, Plastique, and the Key, to help him break back into Terrificatech and save the future. While Terry plans his heist, strange, seemingly unconnected events don't bode well for the days ahead. Rampage breaks a man named Ethan Boyer out of prison. Grifter is attacked by an invisible assailant. Crop circles and cybernetic monsters are popping up in southern Asia. And there may be more to Superman than meets the eye. Can Terry destroy Brother Eye in time? Will Firestorm answer for Green Arrow's death? And why is Superman wearing a mask?
And that's it for this episode. Be back next week for another interview with a great comics creator as we count down to episode 150. But until then, keep reading your comics.